Other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Get ready for the most popular morning show anywhere on the internet. You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia right here on LA Talk Radio. If you'd like to take part in the show today, give us a call at 323-203-0815. And now your program hosts, Sam and Mia.
Good morning and welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, December 11th. And we're okay. And we're moving right along, right before the holidays and stuff. And we've got about, a week and a half before we go on holiday.
Mm-hmm.
For about a couple weeks, like probably the rest of the world does.
And, yep.
Yeah. And then you wonder who's left to actually run the stores and the businesses and stuff. But I guess some people don't get the time off.
Yeah.
So
I know. I
always
found that
grateful.
Like interesting how so many places still like stay open. You know, it's like, how do you find people to,
right.
you know, work in the restaurants or the bars or whatever? Because everybody asks off, especially here, because
right.
everybody's from somewhere else. So everyone
That's
wants
true.
To go home.
That's true.
So it's like, oh, I'm, you know, taking these days off. I got to fly back and see my family. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it really depends, you know, and, our guest just walked in, which is good. go ahead, have a seat, relax. And, we didn't get him water.
Oh, I don't know
if
this one
okay,
if he wants. I haven't opened it yet.
Okay. So we were talking about the holidays and stuff, and you know, I guess people know they're going to have to be expected to work on certain days. You know, I mean, it's mm-hmm. just like not everybody has a cushy job that they can decide, you know, I'm going to work or I'm not going to work.
Right.
And, but usually yeah. they get time and a half or double time on the holidays, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
So that's not
true.
Bad, you know?
Or they're just working, you know,
yeah.
part of the day. It's not like working the entire
yeah,
know, Christmas
but they can't
or whatever,
get away or anything. Yeah.
yeah, no, I know. Yeah, that's got to be pretty tough. I
yeah,
couldn't imagine not being at home with my family, you know, for the holidays.
Yeah, yeah.
Never.
Well,
imagine
you know,
it.
Especially in retail, you know, I mean, people don't really get a lot of time off, you know, and they have to
mm-hmm.
They have to really to be there and be counted on, you know. So, you know,
yeah.
so we're lucky in that way.
Yes,
and,
yes, we are.
I just love the holidays, man, you know. But I got to tell you, usually it's like here you don't feel it on the street. You have to go to the mall. It's not like in New York or anything, you know, or maybe in Chicago even. You can feel it in the street and stuff.
Oh,
but here,
of course, yeah. No, here you don't feel it at all.
You
That's
don't,
why, like,
you know, so
I
you
need,
go to the mall.
I need to be home for like a little while before I can like get in the groove, you know, and like feel the spirit before Christmas actually comes and goes, you know. I'm like,
right.
come on.
Yeah, so here we go to the malls to feel it's a holiday, you know. But
yeah.
the thing is, the malls are so packed now. I've never seen them like this before, you know. I mean, there's nowhere to park.
Really?
If you saw, there's like parking across the street, right? And it's always empty. It's like huge, like a football field.
Uh-huh.
There's never any cars parking there. Now it's full. So,
really?
Yeah. So a lot of people are shopping now, I guess, which is a good sign,
well,
you know.
Yeah, of course.
It means the economy is getting better, I guess.
Yeah, let's hope so. I mean, it's like the biggest, you know, shopping season ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is Christmas because everybody's buying gifts for people. But
yeah
I mean, I don't really go to the malls here.
Yeah, I know. I don't either.
You know,
I mean, there's not much for me to do there.
It's funny
you don't go shopping.
Shopping that I do,
uh-huh.
I do at home when I'm in Chicago.
Oh, really?
Because we have,
wow, that's
we have Woodfield Mall, which is like, yeah. it's like the best mall in the world. I mean, Mall of America is bigger, but Woodfield actually has more stores.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wow.
And I like, that's my hood right there.
Yeah.
So, hello. Why would I go anywhere else for shopping when,
yeah.
you know.
That's true.
Woodfield's
that's very
like
true.
Known for that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty awesome because we, you know, we get like around this time, we get like huge, like charter buses, you know, like Greyhound buses filled mm-hmm. with people from like, you know, other, like, you know, further, you know, further down Illinois, where it's like boo-foo, middle of nowhere, you know, and like people coming from like Indiana or Wisconsin, like neighboring, you know, neighboring states. And it's funny because they all come to Woodfield, but they come like these huge, like Greyhound, like tour buses and they come to Woodfield. Yeah. And then they get these huge bags and then they just go nuts. They just go shopping and, you know, and that's how they do their Christmas shopping because it's so far away. But yeah, they have these big like tours that come to the area.
Yeah.
It's insane. Really? I remember I worked at a clothing store for a little while in that mall.
Yeah.
And we used to be like, oh, here they come, you know, all the out of towners coming to Woodfield to get their shopping done.
I know, people and shopping, you know, it's crazy. But so anyway, I'm invited for this fundraiser today at or tonight at the W Hotel in Hollywood.
Oh, lovely.
And yeah, it's supposed to be pretty cool. A lot of hot models and things like that, you know, like I guess they raise money for children, you know, for the holidays.
Oh, very good.
So it should be pretty cool. And I was enticed to go because there's a lot of beautiful women and stuff and and some guys I know, too. So it should be fun, you know. So maybe I'll get out for a change and actually go have some fun.
Yeah,
you know?
That sounds like lots of fun.
Yeah.
Speaking of models, did you catch the Victoria's Secret fashion show last night?
Oh, no. Did they have it all?
Yes.
Oh, no. I missed it.
Never miss it. It's like, I wait all year for this show.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Because that used to be, I mean, that used to be my dream.
Really? You wanted
I
to be,
thought, yes. If I grew tall enough, like I used to want to be 5'9" so bad.
Really?
So I can be a runway model. Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah,
you know,
more specifically because Victoria's Secret. But yeah, I was just obsessed at like a really young age. Like I remember always watching the, you know, around Christmas time, watching the Victoria's Secret fashion shows back when like Tyra Banks, you know, was, you know, doing that in her prime. And it was just, I don't know, I just thought the wings and, you know, becoming an angel and everything, I just thought was so fascinating and amazing. And the performances they always had were great. So it's like a huge, you know, huge part of my, you know, tradition around the holiday season.
Yeah.
To watch a Victoria's Secret fashion show. It was definitely very inspiring, although I'm thankful this time that I've been working out so hard. Like, usually, you know, and it's funny because I'm seeing a lot of these posts on Instagram. You know, you watch that and every girl is like, ugh, I feel so fat. I feel so terrible, you know. This one chick posted a picture of Honey Boo Boo, you know, and like, and she's got like her shirt lifted up and she's looking down at like her, you know, stomach with all her like little like baby rolls, you know, like little fat rolls, you know, and it's just like me watching the Victoria's Secret fashion show last night. Like everybody feels like super fat up against these models, but I've been, you know, I've been training pretty hard and, you know, I myself have a little bit of a modeling debut on Saturday. I have a bikini photo shoot.
Wow. How cool.
Yeah. Wow. So
where are you going to do the shoot? Like on the beach or something?
No. It's actually at a mansion. So
at a mansion. Oh, wow. Look at you.
Yeah.
Mansions and stuff.
Pretty stoked. So yeah. Yeah. I've been working pretty hard and I just need to like, especially now after seeing the fashion show, you know, I'm like super like extra motivated to like diet like hardcore and work out. Like literally I've been like, even on Sunday, I was at the gym. Sunday, Monday, yesterday, I'm going to go today.
Wow.
LA Fitness. Woo.
Yeah. So it's interesting to me though that they want like taller women because I mean, I can see that like on a catwalk and stuff, you know, where, you know, but in pictures and stuff, you can't tell, you know, I mean, these girls like lie down and, you know, the lingerie and things like that. So I don't see why height has to be a factor, you know, but.
Well, for Victoria's Secret, more specifically, I mean, all the girls, you know, most of the girls that are modeling in the pictures in their magazines are walking the catwalk.
Oh,
so it's more like they're runway, you know, fat, they're models, and then they also do photo shoots like,
I
on
see.
The side.
Okay.
But that's what they're, you know what I mean? That's how they pick them, I think, if they, you know, audition with their walk and everything.
I see. Okay. So, well, you see, I mean, you look perfect and still you don't feel perfect. So there you go. You know, nobody's happy, man. Everybody wants a little more.
Oh, I know. I just wish I could be Adriana Lima. She is like my absolute idol. She is perfect. Like, she is so gorgeous. And I mean, I feel like, you know, parts of me kind of looks like her, aside from the eyes, because she has like really like supersonic bright eyeballs.
Adriana Lima, like, a Brazilian model.
Yeah, my eyeballs are like black, but a lot of people seem to like them, so I'm like, all right, that's okay, I'll take that.
Yeah.
They used to have like colored contacts. I went through like the whole color wheel. I've had every color eyes you can possibly imagine.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Naturally? Naturally occurring? No, with contacts. Okay, with contacts.
So, you know, and after doing that, then I'd go back to clear, like out of my normal eyes. And I felt like I got more like compliments on my eyes, just like the way they were, rather than having the color contacts. And people go, eyes are so dark and like mysterious and sexy. They're amazing. I'm like, what? Really? These are my boring eyes. These are my natural eyes. What do you mean? But now I have LASIK. So, you know, these are my naturalized.
You naturalized. So. When did you have LASIK done?
I got it for my 22nd birthday.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, last May, because it was like right around my birthday, because my mom came out for my birthday.
Did it work well? I mean, do you like it?
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. I was a -8.
Really?
Yes, I was legally blind, like my whole life. So I never knew what it was like to see clearly without aid.
So you wore glasses for a while?
I constantly, I had glasses up until I was like probably 8 years old. Mm. And then I got contacts at a pretty young age. Wow, but I still needed like my glasses to like, you know, next to like my bedside at all times, because I needed them to get to the mirror in the morning to put my contacts in.
Are you serious?
Like, I am
that bad?
Literally, like, I have to like feel around for stuff. Like, I could not see. I can see some color blur, and that was about it.
Wow, that's really blurry. I mean, my God.
Yeah.
Like, I've never heard of that before.
Really,
so you really needed the LASIK. Uh-huh. Huh.
So, yeah, it completely changed my life, and it was so quick. Uh-huh. It was Dr. Robert Maloney. He was, like, amazing. He's like, 5 stars on, like, every rating ever.
Really?
And somebody else knew him, and, you know, he was supposed to do my surgery, but he opened up another practice. He was going to do it for free. So that's how I was, you know, my mom was able to, that was my birthday present.
Oh, wow.
She could afford
it
because they, you know, knew each other, so I got a pretty good discount.
Yeah.
So that was really helpful, but,
yeah. They have some pretty good deals on like Groupon and stuff, you know. I mean, what's like LASIK usually, like $3,000-$4,000 or something?
I think mine was $6,000.
Wow!
Like that. But I obviously, you know, with the discount, it was much different. Yeah, there's no way I'd be able to
I see it
that.
In like major places for like, you know, $2,000, you know, $2,500 or something, you know, on a Groupon type of a thing.
Yeah, but no, you definitely want to go to like the best of the best when it comes to your eyes, especially because mine were just so awful.
Yeah,
I'm like, I can't take any chances.
Yeah, no, I know. I didn't want to take a chance. That's why I've been waiting for years to see what kind of results long term. And everybody seems fine. You know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know anybody that's had a bad surgery and became blind because of it or something. You know?
Right. Yeah. No, I don't know anybody like that either.
It's been around
also,
for a while.
Because not everybody is a candidate.
Right.
For the laser surgery or Intralase, which is what I had. But also, like, what you can do is they put, like, a permanent contact lens underneath, you know, like,
you
your
don't have
corneas
to describe it
or
like that,
whatever. But, yeah.
I'm going to faint in a minute.
People always get squeamish when I try to describe, like, how my surgery went down. Everyone's
I know.
Like, okay, that's enough. I have to sit down. I can't even handle it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, actually, my ex is getting that done, the permanent lens.
Really?
Because he wasn't a candidate for LASIK.
Wow.
So he was, you know, telling me that he's going to get the other one done.
Like, wow.
Good for you.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to go for a consultation and see what's going on.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Check it out. It's worth it.
Yeah. Adriana Lima. I never heard of her before, but she's definitely beautiful.
I'm assuming that you just Googled her.
Yeah, I Googled
staring
her.
Staring at her on your computer screen right now.
Yeah. Well, she's 32 already, so she was a model probably a lot earlier in her life, right? I mean, Victoria's Secret and mm-hmm. stuff.
Oh, yeah, she's been... Well, yeah, since 2000. Like, doing it for a long time.
Yeah, since 2000, so that's mm-hmm. 13 years. Yeah, she was probably 19 or something.
Yeah, she's just incredible yeah. looking.
Okay,
I love her.
I'll turn off the picture so I don't get distracted.
Good idea. Yeah.
There are a couple stories I wanted to discuss, but, you know, I mean, our guest is waiting here patiently, and we appreciate that. So we'll welcome him to the show. We have Daniel here. Welcome.
Good morning.
Yeah, and you'll want to talk close to the mic, so bring it a little closer to you.
How's that?
Good. That's perfect. Were you able to find parking
yes,
after
I was.
All? Good.
Yeah, that parking attendant guy, I don't know. I just feel like sometimes he just doesn't like people.
He doesn't. He doesn't like people.
I really don't think he likes people. He's just.
But, you know, the thing is that when you talk to him, he's nice. You know?
Yeah. Once
he's
you
nice
actually like
smile to you,
warm
you know?
Up to him, but like in general, like even if you see him, he'll just be like kind of hanging around the grounds, like sweeping up leaves or something. And you're like, oh, he'll be yeah. like in front of the door. He'll be like, oh, excuse me, hi. You know, just kind of look at you. Like,
yeah.
Oh, whoa. Okay.
He never
I'm
says
sorry.
Hi or looks.
I'm
up.
Sorry.
But you managed to park your car, which is a good thing.
Yes.
So you told us you're an attorney.
I am.
Right?
Yep.
So tell us a little bit about what kind of law you practice.
Well, I do plaintiff litigation. It's oriented around a lot of arguing, and that's actually what I enjoy doing for very long.
Really?
Oh, to the detriment of my parents, I love arguing. So,
is that why you got into law? I mean, is that one of the reasons?
I mean, the story with me getting into law has to do with my parents emigrating to the United States, and they went through some tough stuff back in their country, and then when I was here, when I was young, I was actually, I wouldn't call it bullied, but I was picked on a lot.
Really?
You put all that together, it's a recipe for someone who likes to argue.
That's true, yeah. So, and how long have you been practicing law now?
Just around 3 years or so.
Yeah, so you're a young lawyer, young eagle, right? That's what they call them.
I guess you could call me that. I mean, I work with people who are much, much older than I am. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, yes.
Yeah, that's cool. So let's find out, are you originally from L.A.?
Born and raised.
Really?
Yeah.
So your parents came here from another country before, right?
They came from Iran in the 70s.
I see. Okay. Oh, wow. And that was after the revolution or before?
Depending on which family member, some got out at better times, some got out at worse times.
Right. Yeah. And I guess it probably got harder to get out after the Islamic Revolution, right?
The story of my grandmother, she actually had to sneak out of the country.
Really?
Yeah. In a secretive chain of some kind of a network. I don't know all the details, but I know she went through some stuff.
Wow. So they wanted to get out badly.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's scary.
I know. Because, I mean, the whole place changed. You know, it used to be like such a... like a great productive place, you know. I mean, there was a lot going on in Iran and stuff. Okay, so there was some, what's the word I'm looking for? Corruption.
Oh,
corruption. Thank you. So there was a lot of corruption and stuff, you know, and a lot of wealth concentrated with very few people. But it seemed like people were happy at the time, right? I mean, do you think?
Well, you know, I get a biased perspective because I get it from my parents.
Right.
And they were happy over there. But obviously, there's also people who weren't happy over there. So
right.
As far as I know, I'd probably argue that things were better before the revolution than after the revolution. But I'm sure there's people who would counter that.
Yeah, obviously, you know, more like, more maybe like fanatic people or maybe just religious, religious people, you know, would probably feel it's better for them. I mean, I'm sure that this... this regime wouldn't be there unless people, for the most part, went along with it, you know?
You know, what I hear about a lot of the youth in Iran right now is they're not exactly the most fond of the government.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of pressure from the grassroots areas to move things forward. And to an extent, you can see that with a new president. Now, what's actually talk and what's actual real policy, I don't know.
Right.
But at least there's a little bit of movement happening.
Right. So now, Iran, I mean, is there like free movement in and out right now? Or does everybody go through hell to get out?
You mean at this point, the country?
Yeah, to leave the country.
I can't imagine, you know, with all the sanctions and all the issues going on, especially in a post-9/11 world, I'm certain that there's some difficulty to get out of there. But I don't, it's not like what it was when my grandparents got out of there.
Right, right. So so your parents were happy at the time before the revolution and everything, right?
Yes.
So what made them decide to leave?
Well, it was becoming pretty obvious that being of certain religious backgrounds was frowned upon.
Right.
And eventually that began to get worse and worse. And, you know, the pinnacle of the story is I had a relative who was actually abducted from his home, and he's never been heard back from
him.
Wow.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So
was
he
like an activist or something?
No, he had a restaurant that served a particular type of religious food.
Oh.
And that
really?
Was,
wow. That was enough for him to disappear. Huh?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's terrible.
Awful, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it makes you appreciate, though. You can walk around the United States and the place isn't perfect, but
right.
It really makes you appreciate the place.
Exactly. And that's why everybody comes here, you know? I mean, you can walk the street, nobody bothers you, nobody knocks on your door. And where this happens in many different countries, you know, and it's like that all the time. I mean, I wanted to bring this up quickly because, I mean, this, like, and I'm changing the topic a little bit, but we're talking about different cultures and religions, right? They're talking about these mothers in Cambodia that are selling their daughters, like, as young as 12 years old because they're so poor, you know. So they give them, like, a certificate of virginity. And then they get raped for days, you know. And then once they're not virgins anymore, then they send them to a brothel where they get raped like by 6 men every day or something, you know. So these are little girls, you know, and they're
that's
just
horrible.
Like,
this is
yeah,
disgusting.
I mean, even an adult.
And where is this, imagine. Cambodia?
That's Cambodia. And they're very, a lot of poor people there and stuff. But, I mean, it's your own flesh and blood, you know. How can you possibly do this, you know? It's like you'd give yourself to prostitution before you would your daughter.
Poverty, poverty can breed extremism.
Right. So it's hard to really judge them, huh? Uh-huh.
That makes me sick to my stomach.
It's a tough story to hear.
It is. But, you know, but that shows you again, you know, with different cultures, people are just sometimes stuck in the past, you know, and they're just like, and they impose their views on everybody, you know. And I think that's what happens, and that's why people want to get out of countries like Iran and stuff. So you can experience this freedom we have here.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine when I was an undergrad at USC. He was actually an exchange student from Iran. Mm-hmm. So it can't be that hard to get out of there. But I asked him, like, well, what's the biggest difference between your education, your upbringing in Iran, and living in the United States? And he takes a moment, he pauses, he looks at me and says, you know, it's the freedom.
Yeah.
You can say what you want here. The government's not going to knock on your door, etc. And I appreciate that.
Right. Yeah.
I couldn't imagine that, like, living in fear like that every day when you wake up. Like, there's a possibility of, like, the government knocking on your door and like doing something crazy. Like, it just
God forbid you'd serve some food that they don't approve of.
I couldn't imagine living that way every day, just always watching your back.
But many people are born into it and they don't know any better, you
that's
know
true, so
that's
true.
That's what they have to go with.
Yeah,
but back to you. So so your parents came out, did they come directly to LA?
No, they spent some time in Israel and the UK before they were able to make it to the United States.
I see. Okay, so you guys are Jewish. Okay, so that's what you needed to tell me. But now I understand the struggle. Yeah, because it was a lot of struggle. You know, my mom was born in Iraq, and they also, I mean, that was back in the 40s, but they had to escape also. You know, they wouldn't let them leave. And I mean, still, I don't understand why a government won't let you leave. I mean, what's the big deal, you know? If you don't want to be here, don't be here. But they figure, you know, they don't want like a mass exodus or something, I think. But Jewish people always, you know, have had to go from one place to the other because opinions have changed, you know? So you just, and they never had a country until now. And now we have a country and they want to all throw us to the sea or annihilate us completely, you know? So that's a Jewish story in a nutshell. But so they moved to Israel. Now, what was the problem there? They didn't feel like they could settle down there?
You know, I'll be honest with you. The whole situation was so traumatic for my family. Uh-huh. They don't give me all the details.
I see.
One of the funny things is my last name is not actually my family's real last name.
Oh, wow.
They changed our last name while we were in Iran to hide our religious identity.
Right.
So there's a lot of little details here and there that I don't have.
You don't even know about
it, at the end of the day, I know we had some family who were living already in California.
Uh-huh.
So everyone just decided. I mean, there was a huge exodus of Iranians who came to Southern California. They're still here.
Yeah.
So I guess it was just the hot place to be.
Yeah. Cool. So then they had you. Do you have any siblings?
I have two younger brothers.
Two younger brothers. So you're the oldest.
I'm the oldest.
And so you were born here. You're totally American and
born
everything.
And raised.
Awesome. Have you ever been back to Iran? Did you ever visit?
No, never been back.
No
there.
Desire, huh?
You know, I there's places I want to travel to. I don't know if I'd put Iran on that list.
Right.
I'm sure there's some interesting culture there, but I'd rather go to Japan. Right,
right, exactly. I know I'm hot to go to Japan too, yeah. You know. I mean, yeah. I don't know what it is, but it seems pretty cool.
Just like the city life and the lights and the fast pace of it all.
Yeah, and it's a totally different culture, different language, exciting. You know, different food.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's really strange, you know. When
I love
you go
sushi,
there.
So.
So this is cool. So so you grew up here in L.A., and what part of L.A.? Were you in the valley here? Or?
No, my family was in West L.A. the whole time.
Oh, I see. Okay, which is a nice area.
Nice area.
And so you went to high school and everything. You were bullied there, and did you decide that...
It was, you know, in elementary school, believe it or not, I'm a lawyer now, but my English wasn't the best.
Right.
And my spelling wasn't the best.
Right. Even though you're born here, but that's because what you heard at home.
I was multilingual.
Right.
Yeah. So what ended up happening was people would make fun of me, and it was kind of tough. I was a very shy kid. Like, if you would ask me when I was 6, 7, 8, 9, 13, would you be on a radio show when you're 29, I'd be like, not a chance. But so, you know, there was always a lot of pressure on myself in terms of that stuff, and it just built up over time. And in high school, I never got bullied, but I would stand up for the kids who got bullied, and then I would get bullied.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you're a big guy. You were able to defend them, huh?
That was part of the luxury of growing up.
That's the thing. I mean, in high school, it comes into play, you know, how big you are.
It's uh-huh.
Even in elementary school, I think, it's always a, you know, an issue because I know I was sort of like a tiny kid and stuff, but so I never would mess with the bigger guys and stuff. But I remember one time I was really bullied. And I decided I'm going to take this guy on. And you know what? I went so crazy. I laid the guy on the floor and I was sitting on top of him, you know. And I was just so angry. So, but at that point, nobody fucked with me anymore.
Yeah.
That was it, you know. And I just felt like you really have to stand up for yourself. I think that's what it is. Don't let people see you're afraid.
It's the same thing in my career. Same exact thing. People push people around.
Right.
And the question is, when they push you, do they feel a wall or do you just give?
Right. Mm-hmm. Wow. So how did you, so in high school, did you already show an interest in law and things like that? What did you want to do back then?
My teachers certainly thought so.
Oh, yeah.
I argued with them about everything. I've always had an inclination. People would be watching MTV or Nickelodeon. Mm-hmm. I'd be watching Discovery or History Channel. I always had an inclination towards nonfiction and objectivity.
Right.
And that, with my desire to argue, sort of made sense, and it was pretty obvious towards the end of high school. I knew what I was going to do.
Really? So that's pretty good. But I'm sure at that point you still didn't know what was all that was involved in law and stuff, right?
I mean, at that point I just thought I'd be in front of a judge all day arguing in front of a jury.
Yeah.
So, Boston legal status.
Yeah.
I used to love that show.
So, I mean, are you in front of a judge a lot now? I mean,
yes.
So you're a trial lawyer.
Precisely.
I see. Okay. So, after high school, where you mentioned USC, is that where you went?
Yes.
Wow. So you must have done pretty well in high school.
You know, I think it was a little easier then. My baby brother is trying to get in now, and I think he is so much more scholarly than I was.
Really?
And it's even hard for him to get in. I'm like, oh, my goodness, it must be really tough nowadays.
Right. Wow. Is that because there's a lot of people trying to get in, or just the standards are higher?
I wouldn't know. I can only assume the population has increased. USC has certainly gone up in the rankings. Mm-hmm. Not too long ago, it wasn't considered to be par with UCLA. Today, they're neck and neck.
Really?
That's going to cause a greater influx of people.
I see. Is that the law school or the entire university you're talking
about? The entire university.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. It's pretty cool. I plan to go to UCLA for a master's for a MBA. And but I never did, you know. I mean, I started a business, my animation business back then. And so I never got to it. But college is a cool thing. You know, I really think it's great. When I went right out of high school, that was like the 70s, you know. I mean, we were like getting high all the time, so I couldn't really focus. I couldn't really focus on college, you know. So after two semesters, I just dropped it for a while. But then I went back to college in my 20s, and then I went back to finish the last 2 years when I was 27. So, you know, but I think then you approach it a little more seriously, you know, because you want to be there, you know, you should be there. And so I went and I did great. You know, I graduated with honors because I really wanted to get into the MBA program at UCLA, but then it just wasn't meant to be, you know. But I started my own business and it was amazing, you know. So, but I do recommend that people definitely go to college, you know. I mean, I can't imagine not having gone, you know. And I want to go back for a master's and stuff. So how many years of school did you have to go through?
Well, you have undergrad, which is, what, about 4 years, right. And then you have law school, which is another 3 years.
That's 3 years
in
law.
What they don't tell you is you have to take the LSAT before going into law school.
Right.
And then you have to take the bar after going to law school.
Right. So that's a lot of exams.
It's a lot of time.
Yeah, wow. So I imagine you probably graduated with honors with your bachelor's degree.
With USC, yes.
Right. And then, so law school, did you go to another school or?
I took a year and I worked in a law firm. And
oh, okay. That was a good idea, right?
Yeah, it was actually a fantastic move. Right. And then from there, I went to Loyola Law School for law school.
I see. And that's a pretty good place, right? Mm-hmm.
Especially for litigators. Right. The school is very oriented towards litigation.
Oh, okay. And So I would imagine when you decide to become an attorney, you have to decide what direction you want to take, right? Like, you know, whether it's business or personal injury and things like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So what direction did you decide you were going to take?
I had the luxury. I actually, when I went to law school, I worked full-time while I was in law school. So I had classes in the evening and work during the day. And the work that I was doing, I got to experiment with different things. At the end of the day, I knew litigation was what I wanted to do.
Right.
I didn't know specifically what kind of litigation. And I stumbled upon employment, catastrophic injury, workers' compensation, and I really like that stuff.
Wow, that's cool. So you actually defend people that get injured and things like that.
Well, it's a wide scope. Anyone who's, if you've been a victim of wrongdoing, I get the phone call.
Really? Wow. So do you have your own practice or do you have associates and things like that?
I have my own practice.
Oh, really? Wow, that's pretty cool.
Very cool.
So when did this all happen? When did you start your own practice? Right after school?
Almost. What turned out was I already had cases waiting for me
right
after I passed the
really?
Bar. Yeah. People just wanted me to litigate these things.
Wow.
And I realized, you know what? This is taking all my time. It's paying the bills. Would I start my own law firm? Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you can do whatever you want. You don't have to answer to people and stuff. So you rather early on in your career went on your own, right? Because many people take the direction of being an associate and then, you know, all that kind of stuff and partner and these kind of things, right?
And there's nothing wrong with it. There's no right way to do it.
Right. It's just, yeah, like with any business, whether you're a corporate guy or an entrepreneur and stuff, you know, it's pretty much the same thing. You decide you're going to have your own gig and that. So how long ago did you open your practice?
Practice opened up some mid last year.
Oh, really?
After I had some training with some other attorneys beforehand. And after I got that training, you know, I realized, again, I have all these cases waiting. And we just kicked it into gear and we started going.
Wow. That's pretty cool. So you got the cases, what, from people you knew and stuff?
Yes.
Okay. So they already had faith in you and they're saying, okay, as soon as you pass the bar, you got your own thing, we're going to go with you.
Precisely.
Sounds good. Okay. So what are some of the things that people come to you with?
You know, a lot of the stuff, being a lawyer is 50% being a psychologist, because a lot of times people call me and they just want to hear it from a lawyer that everything's going to be okay.
Really?
60% of the phone calls I get don't actually translate to a case. They just want to know, is everything going to be okay? Am I in danger? Should I sue? But a lot of what I do, it's so interesting because every case is so different. Someone came to me, and this was an injury case. Someone came to me and she said, look what happened to my face. And she had just this awful chemical burn.
Wow.
All over her face. Wow. You'd be shocked. I can only go into so many details because this litigation is still pending. But this actually came from a facial beauty product that she had used the day before her engagement party. And she had a second degree chemical burn.
Wow.
The doctor said it was the worst chemical burn he's ever seen on her face from using this product. Again, I can't get into the details.
Right.
But if I told you, let's just put it this way. The company that was making this product was well aware that it was doing this.
Really?
Yeah.
So this must have happened, though.
That's the worst thing in the world ever. I just need to take a moment and like freak out on behalf of her.
Yeah.
Because I would, oh my gosh.
But let me ask you this. Why would a company want to I mean, if they know about it, why would they continue to market it? I mean, the thing is, obviously, they're going to get litigation. Eventually, somebody's going to get hurt. So, I mean, who there would make a decision like that?
Let's say, for instance, you have a product out there, and 25% of the people who use this product have that reaction to it. Now, if there's a million people using this product, 25% is a lot.
Right.
At the same time, you're making plenty of money off the other 75%.
I see.
So sometimes, and I don't want to point fingers at corporations because I don't think they're necessarily evil people, but sometimes they do say, what's cheaper? Litigating this or taking it off the shelves.
Right. And it's kind of like the cost of doing business or the litigation and everything. So corporations are not afraid of litigation oftentimes, right?
No.
I mean, it's not like individuals. Nobody wants to go to court. But corporations and stuff, I mean, they'll spend the money. They'll go through the trouble and everything just so they can get away with things.
Well, it's not just to get away with things. I'll give corporations credit. They try to do things correctly sometimes, and there's sometimes they don't seem to care at all. Mm. They have their lawyers waiting, and they have to. Organizations of those, like I just had a case, for instance, with McDonald's. And, you know, McDonald's is such a happy place. You know what I mean? Then you talk right to their lawyers, and you're like, ah, I see. Okay. But at the same time, they have to be, because could you imagine how many lawsuits are being thrown at McDonald's a day?
Right.
And how many frivolous lawsuits potentially are being thrown at McDonald's a day? At the end of the day, everyone has a job to do, and I respect that.
That's true, yeah. So they have to defend themselves also.
Precisely.
And, so
yeah,
they have, like, big legal teams and everything.
Oh, huge.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, so in your job, I understand you probably also want to create, like, good relationships with the judges and everything, mm-hmm, right? Or even fellow attorneys, right, that mm-hmm you know and stuff. How does that work? I mean, do you ever create like a friendship with a judge or something? I mean, it's not, is that like unethical to do?
No, you know, it's on the judge to always be objective and unbiased.
Right.
And the truth is, we're all human beings. We're all going to have friends. I was actually at a cocktail party, a holiday cocktail party with a judge just last week. And it was adorable because one of the clerks who worked there just passed the California bar, but he wasn't sworn in yet. So after everyone had some drinks, they swore this guy in.
No way.
Isn't that cool? He's the newest attorney in California that night. Was sworn in by a judge who was at the cocktail party.
Uh-huh.
Now, is he biased because we had a great time? I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing, though, is like you said, we're human beings, you know, and the thing is, even a judge can't be, I think, 100% objective. But at the same time, that's why I was asking, you know, because I think there's a certain, like, familiarity with, you know, in your profession where people know each other and stuff, you know. So then finally you find yourself, even with another attorney, you might be friends with him. And then suddenly you find yourself on the other side, on the opposite side in court, where you have to deal with it, right? I mean, does that happen to you?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head with regards to familiarity. Maybe the judge won't be unbiased.
Right.
Or maybe the judge, but maybe he has certain things he's okay with that another judge isn't.
Right.
If you know those things that he's okay with because either you're friends with him, you've litigated in front of him, or another right lawyer has told you these things, you could use that to the advantage of your client.
I see. Okay, good. So now, so you've been practicing all this, and so now you have some, like, steady work coming in all the time?
I do.
Wow,
thankfully.
That's amazing. Well, thanks for finding time to come here and be with
pleasure
us, you know. So now, what about your personal life? I mean, are you married? Are you single? Are you taking advantage of the fact that you're a lawyer and you can impress women?
whether or not, when I was young, these older lawyers would tell me, Dan, you're not going to have time for any of that stuff. And I was like, no, of course you're going to have time for a social life. What are you talking about? I will tell you, in the last 3 or 4 months, my desire to leave the house is just dropping.
Really?
You just get tired.
Wow. That's amazing. So how many hours do you work a day?
I have no idea.
A lot.
Because it's my own law firm. So yesterday, for instance, you know, I was up at 7:30 and we were still working till around 8.
Right.
But every day is different. Some days I come and I do a radio show.
Right.
Other days I go. And I also have an organization that I run for young attorneys. So sometimes I'm paying attention to that. It all
right
depends.
Tell us about that organization a little bit.
It's called the Westside Bar Association. What happened was, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but the market right now for young attorneys is a little tough. And I noticed that very quickly. And a friend of mine, Max Spielberg, he comes up to me, he says, would you like to start a bar association for young attorneys? And of course I say, no, why would I ever want to do that? But he sold me on the idea and he said, look, there's a lot of people, they don't have clients and they don't have a job. And what are they going to do? They need a network. So We founded the Westside Bar Association. I'm so happy to say we recently got accredited by the California State Bar to put on something called MCLE, which is just a mandatory continued learning and education system that attorneys have to go through. And the fact that we got the okay from the State Bar to do that really says, okay, WBA is now an official organization and things are going well. I'm pretty happy with it.
Awesome. Wow, how many people are involved with the organization?
Our last event, we had about 70, 80 people. The event before that, we had about 90 people. We have, you know, in line with the young attorney thing, I should put it this way. I'm a big social media computer guy. Okay. And I look at things, I think, a little bit different than other bar associations run it. We do not ask for an entrance fee. If you want to come to the event, come to the event. Give us your email address. Give us your contact information so we can let you know about the next one. Right. We actually threw a MCLE 2 weeks ago, and usually people charge $100, $120, $150 for these things. I had absolutely top-notch trial attorneys giving explanations of how to do these things for absolutely free at a hotel in West Hollywood.
Very cool. Very cool. And so, yeah, I mean, obviously, and it's good because you give back to the community and stuff, you know. How can people find out more about that association?
WestsideBarAssociation.com or just find us on Facebook.
Okay. And so that provides like services for young attorneys and stuff like that?
It's geared. I mean, I would never tell an older attorney not to come.
Right.
But it's geared towards the younger generation.
I see. Okay. Well, that's great. You know, I mean, because I think, like you said, I think the market's becoming very saturated with everything, you know, including attorneys. And you have all these young people coming out of college, out of law school, and there's nothing for them to do, you know? I mean, that's pretty sad. But that was not the case with you. You were obviously already had work waiting for you when you were out of school, which is amazing.
I got lucky.
Yeah. Well, not lucky. I think you, you know, you did what you had to do. You know, luck probably had little to do with it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so... Now, what are the plans? What are you thinking of doing in the future? Are you going to pretty much continue doing what you're doing? Do you have bigger plans?
I love my law firm. I love the Bar Association. You know, the law firm is a pretty straightforward thing. You take in clients, you sue on behalf of the clients, it makes money, clients happy, law firm grows.
Right.
And so it's a very direct, obvious path.
Right.
The Bar Association, because there are so many bar associations that do things their way, we're always trying to be a little different, so it's a little bit more complicated.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I mean, if these things could grow, at the end of the day, if I could help people, whether it's helping a guy who got laid off because of some kind of a discrimination, or it's an attorney who's literally struggling to you know, put dinner on the table, and believe it or not, you only need to go on Craigslist to see there are homeless lawyers on Craigslist saying, I will litigate anything, please. I just got a divorce. I'm on the streets. I need help.
Oh, my God.
So it's crazy, isn't it? But if I can help someone, whether it be the person who was, you know, fired or the person who is just trying to meet ends meet, I'd love to.
Wow.
Wow.
Amazing. Yeah.
That's big stuff.
I know. So I wanted to ask you something about law that I just forgot.
Go ahead. Oh, no, I was just curious.
Because I always forget things.
Oh, okay. Just about, like, you know, everybody talks about, like, the bar exam being, like, so, like, crazy, scary, and difficult. I'm just curious. Like, what kind of, like, questions? Do they give you, like, scenarios? And then you just kind of have to go from there and be like, oh, well, this is what I would do in this situation? Or is it, like, multiple choice? Or, like, I'm just curious,
it's actually both of those, to be honest with you.
Really?
The bar exam is an incredibly difficult exam. I also think it's the most overhyped exam I've ever taken in the sense that it's a three-day exam. Mm-hmm. And it's 6 days, you know, 6 hours a day, all three of those days. So endurance-wise, it's very taxing. That said, you know, what they do is they have essays on there and they have multiple choice. Then they have the thing, which I didn't like. It's called the, it's like a test where they actually test your actual skills as being a lawyer. And they say, here's the law, here's some facts, write a brief. Or here's the law, here's some facts, here's a complaint, write an answer.
Wow.
And you have to do that in the time they give you on the bar. I thought that was a particularly difficult thing. But overall, I didn't think the bar exam was as difficult as people make it out to be.
Yeah. Hmm. Now, what's the best way to to find a good attorney? You know, how do you recommend, like, word of mouth or, I mean, how do you know you're having a good attorney? I know that one I got, I needed to collect some money from someone, and suddenly he became like, you know, I told him, I said, why are you, like, against me? You know, everything I say, you're, like, saying the opposite, you know? You need to represent me. You need to see things. Yeah. you know, how do you find someone who's going to be on your side?
You know, there's a lot of good lawyers, and there's some lawyers who just don't do all that great a job, to be honest. Yeah. A lot of the time, it comes down to one of two things: results and communication. A, is this person getting you results? Have they gotten results in the past? And here's the truth. In your chest, when you meet an attorney, you should kind of know, do I trust this guy? Do I not trust this guy? The next level of that, which is what you touched upon, is communication. The reason I get the clients I do is I go about things a little differently. I inform the client. I explain the law to the client. I'm not too busy to do that. And once the client understands the law, they realize what I'm doing. Mm. And maybe at that point, they'd realize, well, I'm not against them, and I'm actually trying to do this or that. A lot of lawyers, the number one cause of malpractice suits against lawyers is a client complains the lawyer failed to communicate with me.
Wow.
Now, if you ask a lawyer, why would you fail to communicate? Oh, you know, I'm busy. I have this demur. I have this summary judgment motion that I have to file. And I understand that. I do. I'm a lawyer myself.
Right.
At the same time, someone's livelihood is in your hands.
Right.
And you're not returning their calls.
Right.
Can you imagine the anxiety that that would cause that lady, for instance, who had the chemical burn, if I didn't return her phone calls?
That's true.
So a lot of it also comes down to, and I've had a lot of very seasoned attorneys agree with me on this, it comes down to whether you have a good communication with the attorney.
Right. And whether he has your best interest in mind, you know.
Ask questions.
Yeah.
Ask, you know what, look, at the end of the day, he's providing the service.
Right.
You're the client.
You're the one who pays.
I'm a taxi driver.
Right.
That's all I do. I just do it with the law instead of a car.
Right.
I have to serve you. And if I don't do a good job, you hold me accountable.
Right. That's true. And that's the way it should be. But I think a lot of lawyers have this attitude of like, you know, I know everything. Let me take care of this. Maybe even disparaging their clients or whatever, you know, talking down to them. And, I've seen it happen, you know, and you go in and you feel like crap about yourself when you leave, you know. That's the worst thing that anybody can do.
At the end of the day, that lawyer is hurting his own business.
Yeah.
A lot of what we do, 100% of my cases come from referrals.
Really?
Yeah.
That's the best way, huh?
Yeah, word of mouth.
You don't have to advertise or anything.
Exactly. And if you're going around mistreating clients,
right,
you just lost a huge referral source.
That's true. That's true. And then you have to spend a lot of money to acquire new clients and things like
and
that.
And advertising is a mixed bag.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get good clients, sometimes you get nothing.
Right, huh?
Yeah.
Well, awesome. So tell people how they can get a hold of you. If they, because obviously you're busy, but I'm sure some people are going to be impressed, maybe want to contact you. Go ahead.
Well, you can obviously contact me at the office, 888-551-0163. We're located in Beverly Hills on Wilshire Boulevard. You can also check out my website if you want to know a little bit more about what kind of litigation I do. That's fznlaw.com. F as in Frank, Z as in zebra, N as in Nancy, law.com.
Right, fznlaw.com.
My last name is very long, and I had to figure out a way to truncate it. So it became FZN.
That's fine.
Fair enough.
Awesome. So people can find out more about you and what you do and everything on the website and
Precisely.
Stuff. And then you have the association, of course, for the young lawyers and things like that. And so is there like a link to that from your website?
No? You can find it on my website. Easiest thing to do is just go to westsidebarassociation.com
right.
or Facebook West Side Bar Association.
Sounds good.
Very
okay,
cool.
Well, Daniel, thank you so much for joining us.
You have a great voice, by the way.
Yeah, you should
really
be on radio.
Really good radio voice. I'm like, oh my.
You should be on radio for sure.
Thank you for having me.
All right, pleasure. Okay, Mia, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll
see you tomorrow.
Been listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia, which airs every Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you have a question for the show or if you'd like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please send an email along to sam@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning with Mia is a production of LA Talk Radio, where we say what we want.